beautiful weekend to celebrate. I was looking at the readings and reflecting on it. I thought of growing up. I remember a moment when I was out having a good fun day of summer. I was out with my younger brothers and neighborhood children, and we were all out doing things. And I still remember one of the neighbors who was on his rollerblades and having a grand old time and going around. And we were just having fun. And his sister came up to him. He was probably about 8 years old. His sister came up to him and said, "I have to go. Here, take this." And she gave him the leash. And on the other end of the leash was attached their miniature boxer. And I don't know if you've ever seen a miniature boxer, but the word miniature is enormously misleading when it ends with the word boxer. They're not small dogs. They're just smaller than full-size boxers. So it is an incredible moment. He took the leash, and he, 8 years old, he said this with a kind of level of confidence. He said, "I am in control." Of course, then a squirrel ran by, and the boxer took off after it, and he's on his rollerblade, so he starts flying after the boxer, and with a much higher level of panic, but with equal clarity, he said, "I am no longer in control." Then he dropped the leash, the dog took off, and spent half a day trying to catch a boxer. But, you know, it's one of those moments where, reflecting on it, I was actually considering where it is that we come for in these scriptures. And it's fascinating, because both the first reading in the gospel, we're kind of coming into a story most of the way through. We come into the story of Job, and God's talking to Job, but this is the 38th chapter. Job is kind of one of those comprehensive stories. Reading the 38th chapter of Job, in the beginning there, is a lot like reading about two-thirds of the way into Snow White or Sleeping Beauty. It's a little confusing. You can figure it out eventually, but it's a little confusing. You kind of want to read it from start to finish. But here we are, and God's speaking to Job. Why? Well, Job is a good and faithful man. Job did everything the way he was supposed to, when he was supposed to, as he was supposed to. He was the good and faithful servant. And we know this because God even says, "See my good and faithful servant, Job." So we know that Job is this great follower of Christ. Pre-Christ, but that's okay. He's this great follower of God. Dedicated, following, doing what he's supposed to, living that life. And everything is taken away from him. He loses his family. All of a sudden, the daughters are killed. He loses his home. He loses all of his wealth. It's all taken from him. And when it doesn't seem like it can get any worse, he's afflicted with a number of diseases. Even his health is taken away from him. And this good and faithful servant who has followed after God with everything in all of his life is now left with nothing, stripped of anything. And his friends come to him, or at least, you know, friend in name. I'm not really sure I'd call these people my friends, but his friends come to him and say, "Job, you did something wrong, obviously. And you need to accept that you did something wrong and you have to fix it. Because if you don't accept that you did something wrong and you have to fix it, you're going to stay this way the rest of your life." And Job said, "No, I didn't do anything wrong." And they go through one at a time and try and tell him why he did something wrong and why their theory of where he screwed up and how he came up short. He's like, "No, I didn't do anything wrong." The challenge was that over and over and over again, they said, "It's on you, it's on you, it's on you. You screwed up, you did this wrong, you have to fix it now." Finally, Job begins to believe them. And he gets mad. And he goes before God and he goes, "You know, I've done everything you told me, and now you're dumping it. You're dumping on me. So now everything's on me now. Everything's on me. And it's all coming apart. And you know, I can't do this anymore. Why does everything have to fall on me now?" And God comes to Job and he says, "Really? It's all on you? Did you make sure the sun came up today? Did you ensure that rain fell on the fields to grow the garden? Did you ensure that the moon didn't fall out of the sky? Did you set the mountains or the water? Make sure the oceans don't overwhelm us or the earthquakes topple us? Where were you when all of this was done? Tell me, if it's all on you, where are you doing these things?" God has a beautiful rebuke. He goes through very, very eloquently and expresses exactly what isn't on Job. And at the very end of the kind of discourse, Job says, "You know, on second thought, maybe it's not all on me." In fact, Job actually ends with being fully restored. He has more children than he had even before his affliction. His health is restored and he has a good long life after. He is more wealthy than he ever was before. But he had to go through that affliction. He had to go through that shortcoming. And bad things happened to him. But he was a good person. And it's not that he did something wrong. It's not some kind of karma justice. Because it's not about karma. It happens. But we got to remember that God's in charge. It's this great rebuke. And fast forward to the gospel. Here we are with Mark. And once again, we have that same struggle. We have this moment where we're in the fourth chapter of Mark, but it's kind of important if we know what happens just before this, because it's Mark chapter 4, 35. At the beginning of chapter 4, Jesus fed 5,000 people. He took a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish, and he fed thousands. It's an incredible miracle, and all of his disciples were there, and they witnessed this great event, this great feeding, where Jesus shows that he can do anything if we just give him what it is that we have. And if we give of ourselves and we give what we have, then he can turn it into overabundance. He can pour out all of these incredible gifts. And they witness this. And Jesus, who has done this exact thing. And it says, on that day, as evening drew near, it's not even a day later. They have literally just witnessed this incredible event. And they decide to cross the Sea of Galilee. I don't know why, but they did. And they got into a boat and they headed across the sea. And it's not that they were unfamiliar with this sea. The Sea of Galilee was familiar to them. Some of them were fishermen. It's probably even one of their boats. And they get in, and there's a storm on the water. Which, truthfully, as I read it, tells me that I never, ever, ever want to be in a boat that can ever get in a storm, ever. So that's my life. That's my life lesson that I never want to try. But here they are. They're having this boat, and they're there. And what do they do? Do they say, this Jesus who says he is the Son of God, this Jesus who identified himself as the Son of Man, this Jesus who has fed us, this Jesus who has fed 5,000 people out of just a little bit, this same Jesus who can do these incredible things, he'll protect us? No, they don't say that. They don't even say, hey, maybe we should ask him if he would help us. They don't do that either. No, instead, the storm becomes so great and so bad, they run over to him, they shake him really hard, and they say, get up, we're all going to die. Really? The same Jesus who did all these incredible things? And our first response is, we're all going to die? How is that even a considerable response? It's fascinating. Because what does Jesus do? He wakes up, he says, be quiet, be still. He ceases the storm. Of course, I'm starting to wonder, actually, if Jesus said, quiet, be still to the disciples first. But he said, quiet, be still, and the storm stops, the wind dies. It's all fine. And Jesus doesn't say, there, it's all better. That's not what he says. He says, do you have no faith? Not even a little? How little faith? You witness this incredible miracle, this incredible moment, this truly remarkable feat, and it's not even the first of his miracles. It is one of incredible things that is going on in their life. It is a constant barrage of incredible events going on in their life, and they couldn't trust him for one storm. Have you no faith? It's fascinating. Because we come before God, we have these incredible moments where God speaks to us. Where God gives us great gifts, where God gives us great moments of his kindness, of his generosity, of his mercy, of his love. And whether we recognize them for what they are or not, they are regular. Every time we receive a sacrament, every time we have this prayerful moment, every time we come to God in a very particular way, we have these profound moments with God. These incredibly intimate moments where God reveals his love for us. And 10 seconds later, something bad happens. And suddenly we think it's all on us all over again. We think that we have to figure it out on our own, and we have to survive the storm on our own, and we have to bear through and knuckle down, and we have to figure it out all by ourselves. Why? Do we forget the part where God's in charge? It's fascinating. Because it is expressive in so many ways in this very short passage. The contained in this gospel is a great reminder to each and every one of us that storms will come in our lives. Not always literally, sometimes just metaphorically. We'll encounter that hardship, that setback, that difficulty, that moment, or that ongoing moment where we have a truly difficult task in front of us. And it's overwhelming. And we are sure that we cannot do it by ourselves. And that's okay. Because here's the thing. We're not in charge. We never were. The sooner we remember that, the sooner we take a step back and see it for what it is, God right there for us. He's not asleep at the wheel. He didn't fall off. He didn't fall asleep. He didn't wander off because he saw something shiny. He's not some ADHD child who's chasing after every random thing. That's my job. No, God's right there with us in the storm every time. And if we remember that He is in charge, that He is there, that He is watching over us, that He is particularly guiding us, then we can be assured that we will survive any storm. And we will weather the difficulties, no matter what they may be. And we don't have to run around screaming, shouting that we're all going to go. But rather, be still.